Is, did you guys do an intimacy day? Did that happen?
We did have
one,
yeah.
And I wasn't here. I was in London. What happened? What went on? I gave some
stuff. We had a lot of activities with the staff.
Well, put it through this. Put it through this.
Did you? Was there anything interesting that came up you'd want to share today about it? Before we go into our...
You wrote letters to the girls.
Yeah, what we did was we did an activity where like, we sat in the boys' model.
Yeah.
And we wrote like questions for them.
Was it like apology letters for like torturing them this whole year?
Questions for them. They wrote questions for us, and then they gave us
By the way, if you go to the bathroom for the whole hour, it's just not cool.
I'm not going to be so cute.
Thank you. Okay. All right, we got a lot to discuss this because remember, time's moving. And I've only got, I think, another three more sessions or so with you, Holy Brothers. Or maybe four. Could be four. I'm not sure. Something like that. Anyway, the point is that PR is the best. Vada. Ever. Yeah?
That's not true.
That's not true. Okay. So we're going to discuss intimacy. But before we get to intimacy, we have to do a little review. And the reason why is the habit and the focus we're going into today... It's probably the most important one because it's the key to the game. I mean, I said that about all of them, but that's why they're all important. But this one is really important for your own personal sipuk, like happiness, joy. We want to get something out of being in this world. You know? We don't want to just come here and sort of like, you know, like a Radiohead song, 9 to 5 in the gym and are working to the gym, you know, and then like sleep, eat, drink and fall asleep and that's life. There's much more to it. So we need to, in order to get the most out of our life, out of our day, we need to review, we need to internalize. We need to have times where we're not in the grind, we're not doing day after day after day, activity after activity. We have to have a break, a moment, a pause. Time to get that inner wisdom, the inner heart, the inner being, the inner you aligned with what you're doing. And how do you do that? The way Stephen Covey says is sharpening the saw. It's the seventh habit. But the concept is, the way I'd say it as a Jew, is we have to have Shabbat. We have to have a time to disconnect, to reconnect. We have to have a time to go over what happened this week. What happened, what's coming the new week. We have to have time, what's going on this year in Bnei Akiva, and B'nai Akiva world, and B'nai Akiva Mechina, however you call it, and what's going to be in the new world, new year to come, like what's my goals and dreams, and all the things, other habits that we're talking about. It connects into the second habit of having a mission statement, end in mind. We have to like have goals, and you have to review. Like, the way my wife talks about it is you have to regroup. She says it all the time. I have a podcast called Relationship Flow, and we've discussed it there a bunch of times. The idea is that we, as a couple, need to, every so on, we mentioned it before, have a date night. But it also means not just going out and having a nice experience of, like, a nice restaurant. It's warm in here. That's why we're here. Yeah, it's not just about that intimate moment that we're trying to create in our relationship and doing it regularly, at least once a week. But when you do connect, you have to actually talk about real stuff that's bothering the relationship. Now, what happens is, a lot of couples, they're like on like, have you heard of this concept? In nowadays, it's very like, it's not so familiar globally because people are pretty expressive and we have media and everything, heating up everything all the time. But there was a concept of the Cold War. Like a lot of relationships are like in a Cold War status, where there's a lot of unmet needs. There's a lot of needs that aren't fulfilled. And instead of facing each other and talking it out, you just...
Proxies.
Yeah, you just... Can you explain that? Come on, brother, you explain. What's proxies? Go on.
I mean, I don't really see how it relates to like a human relationship, but like a proxy and like...
Yeah.
Like Hamas is a proxy for Iran. Like
yeah. Or the Houthis, yeah? So there's a lot of tension, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of action. And every so on, you'll like have a little like fight, but really you're not getting into the real details of the relationship, and therefore it just builds up resentment. It's like a Cold War situation where like what happened between America and Russia back in the day, and it could have ended up into World War III. I think it's still going on a certain level, but like maybe not communism versus capitalism. It's now like some sort of other version of it. But the point is that if you don't face the issues you're having, you don't talk it out, you don't take time out from the general grind, it's just gonna, the relationship's gonna get worse and worse in a real way. And it's hard to face stuff. It's much easier to stuff your face. You agree with that? If you had a choice to, like, you know, eat a nice pizza than have to go sit with someone and work out stuff. Like, I don't know if you've had it. Have you ever had those experiences where you're sitting with someone and they're sort of, this is a little bit what marriage, the harder moments are, that the woman's like really giving it to you. Have you ever had that moment with your mother or your father or a teacher or even a girlfriend where they're really giving it to you and like telling you all the things you're not doing? Right.
For sure.
Yeah. It's painful, yeah?
Yeah.
So you'd rather be doing anything else but that, yeah? It's like, this is like the worst. Like, is it worth the relationship that I have to go through this every so on? So obviously there's a better plan. Rather than let it get to that point where all that pent-up tension and negativity is there, get to that point where you can actually, in a cool way, in a happy way, in a good setting, like we said, date night or date day or wherever you do it, in a happy circumstance, you've just given a present, you're in a good flow, and in those moments, deal with your issues. Sweeten it, make it nice. Like spiritually right now, there's a concept, who knows what's coming up? What's the next festival coming up?
Tu
B'Shvat. So right now, spiritually, there's a lot of tension. Yeah, Tu B'Shvat. Those wonderful trees. So there's a lot of tension. Before we get to Tu B'Shvat, spiritually, there's a lot of, it's cold, it's Tevis. Tevis is a hard month. It, according to the spiritual books, it's Esav's month, like the other enemies, our enemies' month, like they've got the power a little bit over us. Comes Tu B'Shvat, it's like this sweetening in the middle of this winter. Suddenly the sap's going up, things are starting to get a little bit more hopeful, you start to hear the birds sing a bit more, starting to blossom a little bit, you're getting to Chodesh Adar, more happy time, Purim, yeah, you've gone through this Shogavim, these weeks where we're going out Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim wasn't such an easy place. It was the root of all of suffering that the Jewish people went through historically. So, we were going out of that place into a better place, into the Midbar, into the, eventually getting to here, Teretz Yisrael, which you guys already have the pleasure of being here. So now we sweeten it a little bit with nice sweets, with nice trees, the best candy there is. What's the best candy there is? Hashem's candy, the fruits of the trees, yeah? So there's an idea of sweetening the time, sweetening the moments. So in your relationship and intimacy, you have to figure it out also. Because there's going to be a lot of times where a little bit of resentment, judgment, you're not really in your flow. And you've got to sort of realign and get back into your flow. But now what's going to help you do that? And this is where all of you as men, I'm telling you this from firsthand, like fresh experience. You, and it might depend, some women are not like this, but you know, most women are, they don't forget nothing, but they generally only remember the things you've done wrong. This just seems to be how I've experienced, yeah? And the stuff you've done right sort of gets blurred into like,
it's
you
like
know.
If you're a goalkeeper, then you remember the goals that went in.
Yeah, and so too with goal scorer. They remember the goals you scored, even though 20 other people did so much to get you to that point to score, the coach and the team. My son just got FIFA, by the way. So we were talking about it the other day with the Xbox. He finally got his Xbox and he's rocking it on FIFA 20.
Which Xbox did he get?
I don't know.
One X,
I think. And he was busy with FIFA 24. I got it from him in London. And yeah, he's having a good time. You see that he's trying to do the manager job right now. And remember, his English isn't so great. So he's trying to like, he's
English
asking me.
Great?
It's not so, that's.
Don't you speak to him in English?
A lot of my, no, he knows how to speak. But a lot of my sons had taught themselves English, how to read, or they went to lessons. This one, for some reason, like his English is okay, but it's, remember, it's another level trying to manage a team and all the backs and forths. And so he's like getting the word somewhat, but not, it's a fast moving game. You know, he wants to,
yeah.
There's a lot of levels when you're a manager, there's so much going on. I didn't realize how complex it is. It's like, it literally is like being a manager, like they have the amount of details they have. But anyway, so I'm helping them along and I'm actually quite enjoying it, honestly, because it was Spurs and we were winning a lot. So, which, you know, you have to make a game to make that happen. But nevertheless, the point is that to get to that internalization, you have to recognize for yourself, firstly, this is the key game, internal. Go back inside yourself. Remember, we had the three habits. It's about your private victory. Before you can join up with this other lady, this other person in your life and have a public victory and have public experience, you have to get your own situation sorted out. So you're going to go back into yourself. You're going to say, wait a minute. I've accomplished. What have I accomplished? One, I came to B'nai Akiva. I managed to stick it out. Yeah, there's been lots of challenges here. But by the way, have you noticed no one's come to this place to move us out yet? So we made the right choice. It's nice and warm. Yeah, generally we have to assume people are not going to be on time. So even though I was. But the concept is that you've achieved something. You've had, it's a good point to do it right now because you've gone through this point where we're now like a new time period. It's Shvat, as I said, Tu B'Shvat's coming up. It's like the climax part of the winter. We're going to have some good times ahead. But it's a good time to pause a second and just say, what have we accomplished in this course or all the other courses or the other activities? What have I learned? What am I taking with me and where am I taking it forward? So too in your relationship. You've missed. She's going to say, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you're on your phone, you're this, all the issues. And you're going to say to her, wait a minute, before I start fighting back, I'm going to say to myself, no, I know that I've done all these things to make this relationship a good relationship. And they're undeniable, those things. It's very important to be undeniable. I like that quote from Rogan, Joe Rogan. He always talks about being undeniable. You have to know you're undeniable. Like, you've done, accomplished, you've achieved, and no one's going to tell you otherwise. It's not because you're not willing to hear feedback and you're not humble. You're able to change and grow and be a better person. But the point is, there has to be a certain amount of recognition of what you have done before you can go ahead to the new stage. And it will give you a lot more confidence. Very important to build that confidence within, that inner confidence, especially in relationships. So let's start at the beginning. We were proactive. We started about being kind. I see you have the vada, you have all these things going on. Yeah, that you've accomplished kindness. You've learned how to be giving to the people in the program. Even you're telling me you did an intimacy day. I wish I was there. I was in London. But you were able, while you were there, to connect a bit in a better way with the women and of this group. And you've done certain things where you've moved forward in your relationships with all the people here. You know, if you would write down how many acts of kindness you've done within just this room right now, they're probably loads, yeah? You've all helped each other with this, with that. You probably helped the community. You know, we had a lack of farmers. You went and helped farm the land. I saw a bunch of you doing that. You know, there's probably a long list of stuff you've done that's proactive. Now, next, all of you have had some goals and dreams. That's the mission statement, remember? You've got some mission, what you're doing here in B'nai Akiva. All of you somewhat aligned to the mission of the program, but your own personal mission as well. And that can be under review always. You can always update that. I told you my one is about soul, and I'm trying to do that. It's not easy going out. I was in England. I was trying to impact, get on some podcasts, do some big stuff, and ended up doing some of my goals. But, you know, I'm patient with the process. I will have my time. And those people know I'm there. I'm not going anywhere. Like, my message is around, and I will get those opportunities to go mainstream and hit the world with some soulful talk. Until then, I'm still developing. That's the process. I thought you were going to ask a question, but anyway, that's my personal story. Now, next, third, all of you have to prioritize. Yeah, we've all talked about timing, putting into your schedule, figuring out how am I being most effective with my time. There's a lot of distractions nowadays, and to be effective, that's the three things that make you prioritize. Family first, like get tuned into the relationship first. You start to prioritize, and remember, that's a big key for a woman. She needs to know you're her priority. The other way around, that she's your priority. All of you need to prioritize her, and she will know if you're, prioritizing her or not. She will sense it, yeah? Especially if you've got another lady around the corner, then she'll know it subconsciously. They just know. And then the relationship will get really, you know, difficult. So you have to really like focus in. Is this the woman? If it is, I'm going to prioritize her. If it isn't, don't waste your time. That's what I would say. Yeah, it's a waste of time. Unless you guys want to just have fun, but it's not really fun because you're playing with someone. It's a person, and there's feelings and emotions, and there's things that can take place that maybe you didn't want to happen, and then it's going to affect your life, etc. It's not just fun. This whole thing of fun can be a little bit BS. Like, it's not really true. There is ramifications what we do. All right, next. So then we've done the private victory. Now we can go into the public victory. Now we want to make a successful relationship. So you've accomplished all these things being in Bnei Akiva. You prioritize your time. You've lived up to some of your goals. You've done kindness, but now you've shared it with others. You've actually helped someone else start to do that. You see they're struggling a little bit. They've had a chat with you. They're finding it hard in Bnei Akiva, whatever. And you were there for them. You were supportive to them. You're empathetic. You listen good. And so too, we said that was another habit. Really listening. You want to get it good, you've got to listen good. So you really want to connect to a lady, you're going to have to listen good. And then we got to last week, so last session 2 weeks ago before I went to London, the idea of synergization, joining up with others. And that really builds a solid position. Once you're able to work with other people, you're going to multiply in your success. That's the key to any business, to any marriage, to anything that's successful has synergization, has ability to join together. So that's pretty much when we discussed the general situation in Israel, how there needs to be more unity. We talked about all that stuff. Okay, so we've accomplished all these points in these sessions. I summed it up very briefly. But now what the point is, now when you go into reviewing yourself, and as I said, there's going to be either a lady or your own voice in your head. I didn't do anything here. I came to Israel. What did I accomplish? Yeah, you accomplished a lot. Because just in those points, you probably ticked all of them. You did do some of those things. You were proactive. You were kind. You had a goal. You were prioritized your time. You did all those things. You accomplished certain elements of good habits that make your life a better life, more effective life. You've done that here. So no matter what, even if there's someone else has a different measuring tool. Oh, but you didn't get you didn't make $1 million, or you didn't get a degree, or I don't know, whatever. People have all these different other goals that are more important, but in terms of your life, you are now a more effective person. So when you go to make the $1 million, you'll do it better. And you'll do it synergizing with the people around you. Yeah. Or when you have a relationship like a girl, a woman in your life, you're actually listening and you're actually enjoying the relationship instead of it getting to that bitter place where you're killing each other. Yeah. Do you get where I'm going? Yeah. Is everyone getting the point? That because it's a process and you've built up steps, you haven't wasted your time. You've accomplished something, and it's really important to feel that. I tell you why, because all of us everyone has in their head a voice saying the opposite. It's either going to manifest as a lady, and some of it's true, or it's going to manifest as your parents or program, I don't know what. Someone in your head is going to say that you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Sometimes it's yourself. You're just not happy with where you're at. And the problem is with this, it can lead to negativity, like depression or escapism, like things that can lead to heavy other ramifications, alcoholism, drink, addictions. It can lead to all kinds of things that really mess up your life, mess your flow up. So we're all dealing with that. Everyone in this world right now is dealing with that voice, and you have to have the positive voice, the encouraging voice. And this day, Shabbat, with the gift of disconnect to reconnect, that gift to just be able to internalize what you've accomplished, to review where you're at and then plan ahead. That is so important, to just ground yourself, and then especially in a relationship, to get clear where your goals are. Are you on the same place? Are you heading in the same direction? And I'm telling you, if you don't actively do it, if you're in a relationship, the woman will request it. And if, like, as it goes along, the more you push it off, to the point where you end up in the therapist's office, or you end up in the lawyer's office with the divorce papers. Like, if you keep pushing off and deny that kind of focus on reviewing where you're at, it will lead to ramifications if you don't. So it's something, it's like you can't escape in a way. We all need to do this habit. Shabbat comes every week, whether you like it or not. Everyone needs to disconnect at some point to reconnect. You need to have time to just to enjoy being in this world, having a nice meal with family and friends. You need to have time to just not be on the grind. Like Shlomo Kalibach, you said, I don't understand how the rest of the world, how they live without Shabbat. Like, how can it be that they carry on going another week as if there was like no pause, there was no, you know. All right, I want to ask you guys, let's change the flow a little bit, because we've got the point. I want to ask you now, we are right now 100 days since this war began, yeah? 100 heavy days. My son's in Gaza still. He's still in Khan Yunis. Does it feel a little bit like old stories already? Like you've gone through this? Like you've been here? It's almost your whole time in Israel.
Yeah.
Does it feel a bit old?
It kind of just feels like this is what it is. Like I don't really expect it to end anymore. I feel like this is just life now. Like It's weird.
Like a life of war, where like a whole group of people, young men, are all out there just fighting endlessly. Yeah, these enemies who just want to kill us. And if we don't do it, they'll be like walking into Israel and doing what they did October the 7th kind of thing.
I hear like five soldiers dying and like, it's just like, that's the normal, like it's not like...
Yeah. So I think there needs to be at some point, what I'm suggesting in relationships for the Jewish people, we and Israel, we need to like internalize what's going on. Maybe this 100-day time period is a good point to do that. Like I don't know like exactly who's going to decide it, but I think each of us in our own way need to at least take time out and say, look what's happened. Like this has been a really intense time. And how do I go now, internalize what happened to then go forward so that I'm not just letting time go, like I'm going to be in 120 days, 200 days. Like you're saying, we don't want it to be like that. We want to get some resolutions. We mentioned already last time we spoke, we have goals for this war. We got one of the guys here said Mashiach. That's like the end of the road, yeah? Which is probably the truest answer because it's the only solution. But until we get to that point, like what are we doing as a people? Like we have to face the situation and not just pretend it's like it's going on down south, because it's also going to be going on up north, and it's also going to be going on globally. Like my family in London, and I went back there and I spoke in front of all of them. They all came together, all my family, and all my cousins, uncles, one uncle who's in Portugal, but otherwise, other than him, everyone else was there. And I spoke about the situation. I've got an uncle in Italy, but I sent him the audio. And the point is, I spoke about the whole situation, and people really wanted to know, and they wanted us to know they're supportive. Not all of them, like unfortunately, but most of them are supportive, and they want us to win, and they're behind us, and they care about us, and they really do. And it really has woken them up, a lot of people who are secular or not so connected to the situation. They've been woken up by this. And for example, Sunday there was a massive another protest in London on the good side, yeah, in Trafalgar Square. My family sent me pictures, and there's a lot of stuff. It hasn't just ended. It's still, the world is still talking about it. It's like it's still current, and it's not going to go anywhere.
Is it not scary to be Jewish in London?
I didn't feel scared, honestly. I mean, I was lucky because I didn't have to once go on public transport. I literally got to the airport, had a car waiting, and throughout the whole trip, I had one time where I was in a meeting. It was a really interesting meeting with this guy who brought Leonard Cohen and to Israel years ago, and he recently just bought Bon Jovi, and he's a really interesting guy in the music business. So I was talking to him. He worked with Live Nation and all these other big organizations, but he was an interesting meeting I had in town in Great Portland Street. So we were sitting there having a meeting about all this stuff, and then my family member who'd driven me to the meeting said he has to go off. So now I was in London without a car, and anyway, even to drive into central London, you're going to have to pay a lot of money, like extra money just to drive in. Forget about parking, it's even more expensive. So I Googled the place where I'm going to next. It was a 15-minute walk. So if it wasn't freezing, it would have been a pleasure. It was freezing, but I managed to do the walk, and I got to my next destination. It was a beautiful office in Marylebone, and I had another beautiful day and night. I did not need, even after that restaurant, we ended up in Baker Street, beautiful restaurant, Jewish restaurant, kosher restaurant, amazing food. And I got driven straight from the restaurant to my door in London. So I thought I was gonna have to get the public transport back order an Uber or something, but Hashem arranged, I didn't have to do nothing like that. I had people just worked out that everything flowed really good on my trip to London from beginning to end. There was no delays, there was no waiting around. It was literally from thing to, you know, arrangement to arrangement to arrangement. And I love when life goes that way, when it just flows. Now, did everything I wanted to accomplish in London happen? Did I meet all the people I wanted to meet and feature in all the places I wanted to feature? No, but maybe those I planted some seeds, yeah, I open the door if they were interested. It didn't happen, but I sent them anyway what I did do, like the audios and stuff. And that's part of life. You can't always get everything done, but it's going to be done on a certain level. And the point is that you have to now internalize that. I'm talking to you about it because I'm internalizing that experience. It was good. And you have to do the same here, Bnei Akiva. You have to allow yourself to internalize. What are you doing? Because it's going to go quick. Life goes quick, man. I'm 43, coming up to 44. I've got like gray hairs, you know, like things are starting to you know, lifestyle, you get, you know, the marriage, it's a different stage when you're like in your 40s. You get to pre-menopause, menopause. Imagine that. I was talking with my boys at the table and they were like, it's interesting because menopause is menpause. Interesting. Like they were just having like silly banter. We'd had like a lot of drink, but we're just like, men pause. It means literally men pause. Yeah. Yeah. You get the point. Yeah.
That's not a bit of a coincidence.
Yeah, it's not coincidence. The language is very specific. Like all the names of things, even in English, has a direct meaning. Like if you look at man, whoa, man. Yeah. Like it's not whatever. Yeah. Ish, isha is aish, is fire. So if you don't have Hashem's presence in your relationship, the yud and the k, the yud and the hey of ish and isha, you get fire. That's what happens. There's no more fire than a divorce, like when it's gone bitter. It's the biggest fire. I don't know if anyone's ever gone through this or been around
it. I don't think any of us have gone through it.
No, maybe not. You didn't marry yet and get divorced, but you've had parents, you've got cousins, brothers. People who have gone through divorce around you, it's a fire. It's a fire. The fire, the power of a husband and wife is the most amazing thing. But when it turns bitter, it becomes the biggest fire. That's why what we're doing in intimacy, the idea is to get this right. So you don't end up at that divorce office because you did take time to internalize your relationship. You did take time to face stuff together. It's difficult. I you know what happens to me? Before I ask a question, I get when my wife's grilling me, yeah, you can ask any husband about this, and you get grilled. Guys, sleeping dudes, no. When the wife's grilling you, yeah, you can't just put your head down like that. She'll just grill you more, it'd be worse, yeah. So what happens, they're grilling you, you start getting stomach aches, you start, you know, getting fidgety, you want to look on your phone. I don't know, you want anything but there. You know, I need to go to the bathroom, I'm sorry. Anything, like, get me out of this. But the point is you have to sit through it. You have to face it, you have to hear it. And it's the most important thing, one of my brothers who's been divorced already told me when with women stuff, he always said to me, he's like my oldest brother, he said to me, this time will pass. You know, it's based on Shlomo Melech, but I don't know if he meant that, but it's this time will pass. This moment of where she's grilling, it's not going to be like an hour later, she could be totally happy, make you dinner even, yeah? It's just a momentary moment. What were you going to ask, yeah?
What percent of divorces do you think are because, like, the two people didn't, like, work hard enough on their relationship versus they just shouldn't have got married in the first place?
Yeah, so that's a really, really good question. One rabbi, he holds, this is a controversial opinion, his name is Rav Ezriel Talbot, I mentioned him a lot recently. He was a Holocaust survivor, Talbot Rebbe Weiss Mendel. He's a unique person. You know, he said to us once in a group session, he said, once you've had the marriage, you're under that chuppah, all the stories of, you know, are you fitting for each other? Is this the right match? They all disappear in his mind. And now the challenge is to make this work no matter what. That's his mind. That's how he, once you've already made that commitment, that's it. You're full in. You're game on. You're all in. And there's no like having those doubts. Now, are there rooms for those doubts down the road if it really is a mess? Yeah, probably. Yeah. And you'd have to go speak to someone objective and work it out. Is this really, maybe this really was a mismatch? But until you've got to that point, like years down the road, where it's really proven that no matter what you've done, it's just not the right thing. But most people are not all in. That's the whole problem. You never really gave it all. Yeah. So how can you really know? Even if it's easier just to say you're not the right match. But what I always say to myself when I think those kind of thoughts is, you know what the alternative is? When you hear about divorce couples and what goes on with the kids and all the ramifications, there are one or two easier divorces, but majority it's a war, it's financial, it's just even the fact you now have to live separately. That's too, it was hard enough to try to pay for life as a couple. Now you've just divided up your finances to two new locations with all new furniture, new everything. It's like, you know, what are you doing? You just like created this financial burden you didn't even have. Yeah, so like, there's so many reasons why not to go down that road, even though it's so easy nowadays, the divorce road, like, because the world is encouraging it, like, in a certain way, because it's good for the lawyers, it's good for the therapists, it's good for, you know, business. There's a lot of business that comes out of it, but it's not really good, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, like, my dad was married before he married my mom.
Yeah.
Like, he was dating this girl for, like, years, apparently, and then, like, I don't know, they never had any kids or anything. He's now been married to my mom for now, what, 24 years.
Yeah.
They live a very good marriage. I'm so grateful. Like,
thank
God my dad got divorced. Like, yeah. It was obviously not nice.
Thank God, we could say that about so many situations, yeah. And I agree with that. I was just at my brother, who's on his second marriage, and he's got beautiful, wife, kids. And I went to the bar mitzvahs, and the kids are beautiful. You're right. Yeah, there's good things going to come out of difficult things, for sure. And divorce is a solution. But the point is, for each of us, we have to go about our relationships with the goal to get to intimacy, to get to the first things first, to make this tribe work. If it doesn't work, okay, there's solutions. But that was one way of looking at it. It's all in. Now, another way of looking at it is, like what you were saying, that it might not be the right match. That's true. But nevertheless, there's still this concept of making it work. Because if a person really works on themselves, I do believe you can have a successful relationship, even if it doesn't feel so right. Do I experientially know that? No. Because I'm married to my soulmate. I don't know that reality, personally, like on a real level. Maybe it's around me, with people I know.
So then the fact that you say you have a soulmate, you do believe there's the right match.
Yeah, there is that person who's matim for you. Like, they have all the triggers, all the issues that you need to work on. They have all the appreciation. They're the person that's going to tune into you the best way possible for you to become the best you can be and do your purpose in this world. And going to bring down the kind of souls you need to bring down in terms of marriage and children. And like, they're the match. They're the one. So I do believe in that soulmate connection. Now, there are, as we mentioned in previous sessions, there's different zivugim. There's zivug rishon, zivug sheni, zivug shlishi. There's different levels of what's going to be your soulmate. Yeah, and we often always pray for the first one, but it might happen that you mess it up. So then you have a second and a third, yeah? And it doesn't mean they're less, they're just different. So the point is, what I'm trying to say is that this is a challenging process. We're all going to have to go through at some point. And so a lot of people are saying, well, I just want out of this system. I just don't want to get married. You know, it's an expensive game. But the problem is, without marriage, you don't have that responsibility to really change and grow and become the best you can be. That's the problem. So you're losing out. Because as Gedalia says, very clever, this guy in Miami, I've told you about him a few times, I don't want to just have a trophy wife, I want a wife that gets me trophies, yeah? Do you understand? I want to have someone who's going to win me the competition in this world, who's going to be my partner in crime, or whatever, not crime, in partner in life, to win me trophies. So I don't want a trophy wife. She might look nice, but she's not going to win me nothing, because she's just busy on Instagram the whole time, posting and getting DM'd by hundreds of guys. I need someone who's going to win me trophies, who's going to invest back in me. You know, my daughter's been telling me all these different ideas that a lot of men, rich men, I don't know if this is true by you guys, because maybe, please God, you'll all be rich, but they're looking for women who are housemakers. They are not looking for the Instagram models. They are not. You think they are, because of swag and trophies. The clever guys are the ones who know really what's going down, not these fools who get money luckily and then they lose it. Look at them in a few years, they're not going to be where they were. I'm talking about the guys who have long-term wealth and know how to live this world properly and have proper value systems. The real players out there. Those guys are looking, apparently, for housemakers, for women who are grounded in the home, have values, and haven't played around. They want someone loyal. They want someone dedicated. They want all the good things, because think about it, if they're clever people, why wouldn't you want that? Yeah? It's like, it's two different worlds. So it might be initially the first few months, you've got the trophy wife, so everyone's like, respect, you know, like just like they're looking at your car. But just, even if you get a new car, eventually it gets old. Like, it's a few months. And you can't just keep trading it in.
It's like a Ferrari F40, you know?
Yeah, but you can't just keep trading it in, because eventually it does get traded in. And a woman is, if she's your soul partner, it's beyond this. It's beyond these physical ways of measuring life. It's someone who you're going to bond with and go through real hardships together with. She's going to be the one that when you're in a messed up older age state, which inevitably is going to happen, she's going to be the kind of woman who will change your underwear, you know? Who will do stuff that you need, a soulmate, someone dedicated. Not just a cleaner, but someone who loves you in her whole heart. To be there for those moments where you're having a hard time. Like when I had an accident once, and I was in Jerusalem. I fell really badly on the train, the railway, Light Railway. And it was after a concert. I went to a really good concert. And it was some weird energy going on that night, not just to do with the concert, but also some previous involvement financially that I was involved with. A lot of negativity happened that night with some people I was involved with, not because of me, but I felt like a lot of negative energy that night. And then there was this tram crash kind of thing, like someone jumped in front of the light railway and the whole thing had to stop a few times and everyone went flying, because even when you held yourself, but it did it a few times, so then even if you got control the initial first time, but then it kept going, like budging forward, you know, more and more intensely, and so everyone went flying. And I was about to land on this girl who was, I saw her face like fear, because I'm a big guy and I'm about to come crush her. And I had to maneuver in such a way that I wouldn't land on her, so I did. I managed to move to the side, but instead, because I did that, my finger got like bent round and broke completely into half. Yeah? And then I woke up and my finger was like all just like in a crazy position. And like I got up, I mean, and I looked at my finger and I was just, oh my God, I need to sit down. Sat down and just passed out. Yeah.
Was your finger off?
It was just like out of place.
Gone.
So I sat down on the chair, passed out. Apparently, it's a bit embarrassing, but I think I weed myself, yeah, in that faint state. And I was just sitting there, and suddenly the police are coming, ambulance, the whole mess, because the whole railway, like the whole thing was just a mess. And
did they operate on you?
So they took me to the hospital, and they at first put it in a cast, and eventually the operator put metal sticks in my finger and a whole thing. But why am I bringing this up? Because I went home after the hospital. It was 3 a.m. It was meant to be my wife's birthday, like a nice night. And suddenly I'm, you know, schlepped to hospital 3 a.m. and I'm covered in whatever. And she takes me home. And what does she do? I can't do anything. I'm all messed up. She takes me home and she like helps me have a bath and like does all the things that a dedicated woman does. Yeah. And it was like, she then the next day made Shabbat and we had a beautiful Shabbat that night. And we went ahead with our marriage. But if she was one of these narcissists, who knows what, she just walks off, you know, like, you know, you're a loser, you know, how did, you know, why can't you have your car waiting outside of you and drive us back home? Why'd you have to go on this stupid thing? Yeah, the tram. And, you know, they think in crazy ways. I'm just, no, but just saying there's some women, like, they have a standard that's not, you know, real life. And they imagine that some other guy would treat them better with a penthouse. And they're always thinking about this alternative reality. So you're never, ever getting anywhere in your marriage, because it's not about the real marriage. The real marriage is, at the end of the day, my wife always says to me, if you're there for me emotionally, I can deal with all the other stuff. That's really what a good woman will say. Because then that's challenging you to be available emotionally. You get it? That's challenging you to be focused on the relationship. You know, I was in London and I watched my parents, for example. I don't mind saying this. They're old school, yeah? My dad, you know, was working in London. You know, I told you some of the stories. They're old school. So he was living in like concert world party life. And my mum, you know, was there sometimes, sometimes not, most of the time not. And they've got like different ways of talking to each other. It would never go nowadays. If you'd see the way they communicate, in this generation, they would be divorced. It's like a certain hardness, rudeness, lack of respect, sort of way of talking to each other, shouting each other, rudeness. It would not last marriage nowadays, the way their interactions are. Like a woman would be just like, you're just too offensive, I'm out of here, you know. If there was an older time where they just didn't think divorce, it just wasn't. So they managed to somehow still be married, and somehow there's some deep love going on, that even with all the disrespect and disregard to each other in how they speak, but when it comes down to real marriage, they're there for each other, they're loyal, and they, you know, they're still a marriage. But if you nowadays, if you misspeak to a woman, they're not going to let you get away with it. That's generally the reality.
That's sad. They didn't even sad.
What? Well, much more. Well, it's harder for us.
Today, I think it's more respectful. Like,
yeah.
Like now, it's you make one mistake and.
Yeah, they're suddenly thinking those words. Like.
Even if they're good women, like divorce is always on the cards.
Yeah, I mean the problem. One of the issues is that you should think about this, guys. What do you reckon? What's going to be a big nafgamina, a big aspect that's going to come out is who your woman is friends with. Because a lot of the friends, the crew, that makes a big influence on the woman if she has a bunch of friends who've all got divorced and hate men, and they've all got their hating men stories, so then all they're talking about in their time of having their iced coffees and coffee lattes sitting together in wherever they go, Starbucks or wherever it is, they're just going to talk about all the things that men have done wrong and justify why they're so pissed off. So then you've got like this team of women. Not just married to this woman, you're married to all her friends also and all their negative opinions. Yeah, and they're almost like encouraging the divorce option because they're in it anyway. So it's like a loss, like you're up against so much. Whereas if you have a woman whose her friends aren't like that, they're good people and they encourage your relationship, then you encourage their relationship. You're like, in a way, win-win, synergizing as a crew of social scene. And that's also another thing you have to be careful, social scene, is not to hook up with your friend's wife, yeah? Like, to be in those social situations where it could lead to that. So there has to be some boundaries even between couples, that you're not checking out your friend's birds instead of focusing on your wife, because she'll know. That's an amazing thing. Women, and it's brought down spiritually, they know if you've been checking out someone else.
Makes sense, yeah.
They know. It's an amazing thing. It's like almost miraculous. A woman will know if you're checking someone out. It's a true reality. It's based on Kabbalah, spiritual things, but without going into even to the mystical stuff, it's just people know. Like it's a common wisdom that women know if her guy is checking someone out. It's like, what have you been doing? Yeah, they'll start on you about something else, but the real thing they're starting on you about is you were checking someone else out. They'll start on you. They're like, why didn't you think of me about this? And then it's all side issues, nothing to do with the real issue is you were checking someone else out. You were just busy with porn or I don't know what. They sense it. They know it. And that's part of their Ezer Kenegdo. They are there to help you become a better person. And this is the whole idea. We've started off this whole session is that you have to review yourself, what's going down, and take an honest look at your life, your relationship, where you're heading, and it will help you if you do this once in a while together with your spouse. You do it individually, you do it as a whole, as a business, whatever scenario you're involved in on a daily level, once in a while take out some time to just review. Am I on the right track? Where is this heading? Are we facing our issues? Restock, take a look at your business. Am I making enough? Is how you're running your household. It's so important just to pause and to internalize before going forward. And it will make a big difference. So too with this program, right now is a good time. You've got an opportunity. Am I getting what I've done, what I needed to do this year? Say you had a goal to learn Hebrew. Did I do the right moves to make that happen? Or I had a goal to, I don't know what, yeah? To become more like, you know, confident as a person. Did I make the right steps to build up confidence, self-confidence, become better at my sports, better talent, this, better that? Have I done the steps to improve whatever I'm trying to improve in myself, in my life? And it's important to do that once in a while. You can't just keep running along and just not thinking. It's not going to work because there's plenty of people happy for you to do that. There's all the corporate businesses who are happy just to keep making money out of you not thinking. But that's not what you want. For your own happiness, you're going to have to say no. I'm not just going to become a zombie for Davos and all those evil world economic forum people. Yeah, I'm not going to become a zombie so they can just make money out of me. I'm going to actually tell them to piss off, and I'm going to make my own decisions, and I'm going to have some self-control in my life. And I'm not handing it over to the phone or to anyone else to rule my time and life. Yeah, no one likes to be controlled, do you? Does anyone here like to be controlled?
No.
So you all got to stand up for yourself and fight the bad fight. It's a fight. It's not just a fight with Hamas. It's a fight with our own demons. We have Hamas inside of us also. We have all kinds of enemies within and without. And we have to be up for the fight. It's a fight. It's a real war on a daily level. But in order to win the war, we have to have time of internalization. Like that's what we're saying about the 100 days. It's too long already. Our brother said, yeah, it's true, it is too long, but at the same time, this is the reality we're in. Now take stock, what are we doing this for? Like, I want to see my son again. He hasn't been home since almost 3-4 weeks now. 4 weeks, I think. 4 weeks he hasn't been home. He's been to Khan Yunis, not exactly a party over there, yeah? So, you know, I wouldn't want to be in Khan Yunis. You want to be in Khan Yunis for 4 weeks, and then before that, 70-something days in Gaza, North Gaza? Who wants to do that with their life at 19 years old? Yeah, my son had other plans, yeah? I'm sure all of you have plans more than Khan Yunis and Gaza. Yeah? So unless we're sitting on the beach of Gaza in a nice penthouse apartment, yeah, which please God will happen soon, yeah, but until that point, we want this is a rough time historically and as a nation, and there are people doing it for us. So we have to wake up and say, well, what's my contribution to the battle? How am I fighting the demons that exist within myself, within my program, within the world? Am I putting out the message of truth? Am I fighting back? Am I contributing? Do I have a unique talent? Something, everyone's got something that they contribute. I know I've got my message. I went back in London and sat, and not even sat, I stood in front of people and spoke. In people that's even a bit lefty, and I got out the message. And then I went after that to a whole crew of Breast Silver guys, and I reminded them about Eretz Yisrael, because they're even though they're spiritually awake somewhat, but they're not planning on moving to Eretz Yisrael. So I spoke about Eretz Yisrael a little bit, awakened them a little bit, the light of Eretz Yisrael that we get access to living here now. And then I went the next day, and I went to an at-risk teenage program, and I spoke with those guys, and I made sure during the day to meet with this person, meet with that person, phone that person, meet that person. People need to be connected with to this light that we're blessed to access just by living here and by being connected to good people. But it takes effort, and you have to want to go out there and make a difference. You have to be active, proactive in doing that. Because you're not going to make a change just chilling and just watching Netflix, yeah? Unfortunately, Netflix is not going to do much for you, yeah? Maybe there's a few documents. I actually watched the World War II one. Anyone watched it yet?
World War II.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode.
That is solid.
It was insane.
That is solid. Now Netflix actually produced something worthwhile.
World War II in color.
You know, I enjoyed The Crown just because of nostalgia, but the World War II is solid documentary because it's the quality of it.
It's real footage. They colorized it from World War II and like told the story.
Yeah, and it's clean and good. And you hear from Winston Churchill, like he's not. You know, questioning, you know, the civilians in Germany, we need to have mercy. He's like, blow the crap out of them. Yeah, he says it straight. He doesn't say it in such disgusting ways. He has very eloquent, but, huh?
You've been to like his bunkers?
So Winston Churchill, I went to school in Harrow. He's buried there. And his pictures are on the wall. So I grew up with him, like, you know, that was my school. I used to hang out in his graveyard and smoke a lot of weed there. Yeah, probably influenced me. I started tripping over there, I'm telling you. It was weird vibes. But Winston. But I was on the Harrow on the Hill, it's called. And so I definitely had his hashpa, his energy around me growing up. And he definitely was someone that, as a family and as a people, we looked up to. And his words were very clear. There was no, like, trying to appease anybody. Yeah, he was against that whole appeasement thing that caused the war. Yeah.
What was the appeasement thing?
With Neville Chamberlain. Neville Chamberlain was, we have to appease Hitler, yeah, Mach Shimon. We have to appease this Nazi occupation. We have to, you know, until the last minute, till basically all the good security mechanisms were basically knocked out by Nazis. Only then, and then he wasn't even the one to make war. It was Winston Churchill. If it wasn't for Winston Churchill, who knows, we probably would have lost the war. And I might not be alive. So I'm just saying, like, it needed a few great people to step forward.
When did Winston die?
Winston died, who knows? Google it. When did Winston die?
I'll Google it.
I think it was in the 60s or so.
So you never knew.
I never met him, that's for sure, yeah. But he had a big influence on people like Margaret Thatcher, who was also a very strong lady. He had a big influence on our culture.
1965.
Yeah, 60s, I thought. But the idea, even our queen that passed away not so long ago, she always has fond memories of him. And as she was the one chosen to go just talk to him every week, they had a meeting.
Was she queen when he was?
He became prime minister again, later.
Oh, after.
Yeah. So then they had a close relationship. He had a close relationship with her father anyway. But the point is, what we have to understand is that there are people in history and there's opportunities for us to learn from them, and they did not sit idly by when there's a time of war or a time of difficulty. And you have to see that in your own relationships. There's a time of war, there's a time of difficulty. You have to stand up and be there. If you're not the person, no one else will do it for you. Yeah.
I wouldn't idolize Winston Churchill that way, though. Like,
what kind?
Well, because him and a lot of other world leaders knew what was happening to the Jews at the time. They still didn't do anything.
So I agree with you when I think about Roosevelt. Because Roosevelt, like, had numerous opportunities as American president, much more powerful army, much more resources, not under attack, other than what happened at Pearl Harbor. They had much more ability to do much more and didn't. So I definitely feel that way about Roosevelt, the American president. I don't feel good feelings about his approach to how he did the war and stuff. He was sort of dragged along because of circumstances, and Winston Churchill, in my opinion, inspired that kind of action. But Winston, could he have done more as a British army? I think the British establishment could have done more. I don't know if he could have. I think he did what he could, because he also, there was a lot of criticism of him as a warmonger, or someone who lost war, you know, because he had failures in battle previous to this. He had a lot of enemies himself. So he was not totally in a position where he could just do what he wanted.
Was he also in charge of the British Mandate of Palestine?
That's a good question. I mean, they messed up here. Like, I know people who... I have one of my parents' friends, her father was a soldier here. It was not a simple situation what was going on.
Weren't the Brits, like, quite bad here?
Yeah,
like,
weren't so good here. Yeah, so we're not going to only say amazing things about the Brits. So, yeah, look, he was... They call him a colonist. There's issues nowadays with Winston Churchill in the modern-day progressive thought system, because he's not that old-school, you know, warmonger kind of personality. But... If we ignore all those kind of like side issues, like as in terms of the main war that was in front of them at that moment, he was there. He stood up and he took it on, and he spoke, and he acted, and he did what was needed at that time. And we're all going to have to do that in our own relationships, in our own lives. Right now in the war in Israel, we're all going to have to stand up and be the person. So the point is to be the person. He enjoyed a nice, if we're going to talk about him, he enjoyed a nice cigar and whiskey. You know what I'm saying? He drank, he knew how to like take a moment out and just get his head together. He knew he was very into art, I think, and other things. You have to have your outlets to be able to get the focus to be able to go back into the war. You can't just be non-stop war. That's what's happening right now in Israel. It's not going to last long term. We have to have times out of... to be able to reconnect and why we're doing this war, what's it for, clarify again and again. It can't just be endless, you know, just going and going and going, doing, and just being most constantly these speeches of pushing us. It's not going to work. Marriage doesn't work that way. If you keep pushing a wife into uncomfortable situations, eventually she's going to break. You're going to have moments of regrouping and connection. That's the point we're learning about today. We call it regrouping, we call it review, a time for review, a time for internalization, a time for sharpening the saw, getting your mission statement, everything sorted out, clear again, what you're doing this for, talking, working it through with the people around you, having communication, not just rushing into the next situation. This is the key to really have a long-term victory. And that's what we're hoping for in this situation in Israel. And personally, we want to win the concept of being effective. And the next few weeks, the next times we're going to meet, we're going to talk about some really tough stories. One, finding out, each of you are going to have to figure out what is your unique contribution to this world. I want you all to think about that. Another thing we're going to talk about is getting rid of distractions, which is the hardest one to do nowadays, especially in relationships. And the final thing is then once we've done that, like what is this all for, this work, everything we've discussed, what are we trying to achieve ultimately? And that will give us like the inspiration to go into our life beyond Bnei Akiva, hopefully, that we know that we have a larger goal as Jewish people and as individuals as well, that we have a larger goal. And all these parshas, just to end off a little bit of Torah, all these parshas about that. Yeah, we're Mitzrayim, we're suffering, we're in slavery, things are difficult. What's the point of it? To cleanse ourselves from all this negativity that we picked up, and to prepare ourselves for all of history, that we have the strength to deal with exile, we have the strength to deal with struggles, we have the strength to deal with pain, we have the strength to face our stuff. What did Hashem do? He made the Jewish people be there in Mitzrayim while he broke down our oppressors. He brought 10 plagues, 10 makas, to slowly cleanse off the oppressors and watch our oppressors being disciplined from our beloved creator who came himself to do that. And this is the climax now this week, and he's taking us out through the Yam Suf. We're going to talk about that. And the idea of bringing us to this place of receiving the Ten Commandments, the first time God is communicating directly with a whole nation and giving us guidance. And that's the biggest proof of the truth of the Torah, because no other people did he communicate en masse to. It never happened to any other religion, any other nation. It was always one individual who went off and said, I found God. Yeah, but this was the one time in history the whole nation, all of us, experienced God communicating us in a clear way. And these 10 concepts we're talking about here, 10 habits, connect very nicely into the 10 commandments, because God is communicating it how to habitualize in our life a very divine system that will make sense of this world and not just leave us floating around doing whatever. We'll have a very clear, and that's the real key to become intimate with someone. It needs focus. And that's what we're going to get to, hopefully by the climax of this, everything we're doing. That we'll come out with some focus, and that will lead us to very fulfilling relationships that won't end up in divorce and won't end up, please God, in all kinds of other stories. And just friendships here, you'll have better friendships because you'll be thinking a little bit better than you would than just what Netflix is going to teach, unless you're watching that Second World War one, because then you can learn a lot. Because there's always good on everything.
How many episodes was it?
Six, I think.
Six, and I watched one. Crazy.
Yeah, and they're all amazing. And they get better and better. Good. And it's back and forth between, like, the allies with America and Europe, constantly back and forth. What's going on in Europe, what's going on in the Middle East. Not Middle East, a little bit in the Middle East, but mostly in the East.
They should do a series like that, like, also for the Vietnam War and for, like, you know, like...
Well, they do have more color footage from there, but the Kiddush, the unique point...
Vietnam movie.
Yeah, there's some great Vietnam movies.
I went to Vietnam, I went to all the museums. It was crazy.
What?
That's the Tarantino movie.
Tarantino. Full Metal Jacket. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, just watch that.
Forrest Gump.
Or any of, what's his name? What's that famous director who did the JFK movie? He was just on a podcast. I'm friends with the guy, John. I forgot his name for some reason. Oliver Stone, yeah? His movies are very good. He did Clockwork Orange, he did Doors, did great movies. So he's done one on Vietnam as well. It's a very good film. There's amazing nowadays media to give us more of a deep perspective of what happened. But also it doesn't hurt to read a little bit, to listen a little bit. History is so important, in my opinion. His story, what does it mean, history? Also another word, his story. Tune into his story or her story. It's not just whatever. It's his story. There's a journey. There's a story of humanity that we have to tune into and try learn from it. And it's good what you're doing. You have to question it also. You can't just take it for granted and think everything we're hearing historical is like 100%. There's definitely a lot of agendas within the history that we shouldn't like get caught up with. But right now we need the call of victory. We need like a Winston Churchill kind of guy. And each of us could do it in our own unique way to step forth right now and articulate what's going on in a clear way so that people don't lose focus. We all can do that, all of us.
Well,
have a good one.